For those of us who haven't uncovered a great deal about this situation just yet, what exactly has happened in Afghanistan?
Well, I think the important point to make, Sean, is the broader context. We're dealing with that old problem of the Taliban, who joined at the hip with al-Qaeda. We've understood that for some time, despite the claims at the moment that the Taliban will enter into peace talks and sever ties with al-Qaeda. But a faction of the Taliban over the last few years have broken away and aligned themselves with the Islamic State. They call themselves Islamic State in the East, or Khorasan. And although they're much smaller in number than the majority of the Taliban fighters, they're even more aggressive. And we've seen a kind of outbidding war between Taliban and Islamic State fighters in Afghanistan, which has seen even more shocking brutality. You might recall weeks ago we saw an attack on a maternity hospital that saw women and newborn babies killed and injured. We've seen many attacks now these last 2 years in Kabul itself, often using explosive-packed vehicles, sometimes ambulances or vehicles with official police uniforms and driving, so getting through security. And so this attack in this prison fits this pattern of very brazen, audacious attacks by people who are fully committed to dying for their cause and have no sense of any target being off limits or anything being too outrageous. In fact, they specialize in outrage. Now, that was true of the Taliban, but it's even more so of this break-off group with Islamic State. And it's brought out a worse response in the Taliban. So it's a perfect storm, a really horrible situation for people in Afghanistan. And they're well used to horror.
I mean, it almost seems like first we did have al-Qaeda and the Taliban we were talking about, obviously, a few years ago. Then on their downturn, Islamic State was rising within the region. And now there is this new group that you mentioned there. When we thought, essentially, or it certainly seemed from reports, that Islamic State was very much on its last legs. Does this one mark a resurgence of activity in the area?
No, it doesn't. In fact, the truth is worse than that, Sean. The truth is that we were deluded by our own wishful thinking, both with respect to Afghanistan saying things are getting better and with respect to al-Qaeda and Islamic State. The underlying trend lines of these groups is they've got stronger over the last 20 years. And the inconvenient truth for us is that 20 years of so-called global war on terror, or near on that now, 19 years since the 9/11 attacks, just about those two decades of trillions of dollars, it's thought at least $6-7 trillion from the American Federal Reserves, but untold cost in lives and suffering, it's not only produced nothing, we're actually in a worse position than we are. So there's been a number of estimates. The Center for Strategic and International Security in Washington put out a report a couple of years ago estimating that the numbers of fighters and the number of splinter groups has grown somewhere between two, threefold and fourfold. That includes a growth of al-Qaeda operations across Africa, but it also includes just a steady build-up of insurgent activity where the caliphate was in Iraq and Syria. And things getting worse in Afghanistan, not better. Recently, the Pakistanis acknowledged that they may have 40,000 terrorists linked to Pakistan operating or hiding out in Afghanistan. The reality is that when we look at hard data, we're not seeing the curve bent downwards, to use the language of 2020. The underlying trend is just consistently onwards and upwards.
And it's worth pointing out at this point as well, because this is likely to crop up in some reports, the US and Taliban have signed an agreement for bringing peace to Afghanistan after more than 18 years of conflict. But does this really make any impact on the situation on the ground?
It would make a big impact if it's followed through. Let's see what happens in November with American presidential elections. If, as seems increasingly likely, we don't see a second Trump term and see a Joe Biden term, I think we'll see a little bit of a reset back towards a more measured approach to this. The instinct with Donald Trump, I mean, to give him, as it were, credit where credit's due, if that's the right phrase, one consistent feature of Donald Trump, even though he's not strong on policy, much less foreign policy, He has been against the idea of overseas American military engagement, and he's had this very isolationist America First position. Now, that's hard to work out in reality, so he's been trying to find some face-saving way of leaving Afghanistan with these peace negotiations, so-called. If he doesn't get a second term, I think the next president will have to sort that out, and the indications are that a Biden administration will be a much more conventional, competent administration rather than the skeleton team that's worked under Trump under great duress. So that may see all of this revisited. It won't make any of the difficult problems go away, however. The reality is whoever's president and whichever governments in the Western allies we're talking about, no one really wants to stay in Afghanistan. This was never the plan. Trouble is there really never was a clear plan. People want to pull troops out. They want to get on from Afghanistan. But I think we're increasingly recognizing we can't just walk away, because even if we can persuade ourselves that there's going to be some sort of peace and we can walk away, our time is done, you know, we have to sort of draw a line under it and cut our losses, we'll be caught back in, because this is not just Taliban as an insurgency for the people of Afghanistan. This is a safe base for al-Qaeda. And that's the lie of the current spin on the peace negotiations, that the Taliban and al-Qaeda are separated. They're not. So I think we're going to just have to recognize that it's going to be an ongoing military presence in Afghanistan. We're going to have to pay more attention to how we build the capacity of the Afghan military and police, and we're going to have to do that thing we said we never wanted to do, which was engage more fully in nation building. I think the lesson of the last two decades is that military solutions, wars on terror, don't deliver the results that the spin promises, and we're going to have to do the hard work anyway.
I mean, it almost reminds me of the American war on drugs. You know, they declare a war on drugs, and yet the drugs get stronger and stronger. It would almost seem to me the military approach, the war on terror, has made terror stronger and stronger.
I think it's a very good analogy, Sean. It's very much that same problem. Military strategists say if you can't define your end goal, you're not going to achieve it. I mean, you have to have a strategic clear vision. That was never the case going into Afghanistan or into Iraq, and we've seen the terrible consequence of that. But also, if you frame something as a war, when it's, you know, that's the inappropriate language, the war on drugs isn't going to work, because it's not the way the drug problems work. And the reality of defeating these really wicked problems is we need more creative and holistic approaches than just sort of a tough militaristic approach. By the way, we're seeing some of the consequences of this commitment to militaristic solutions, not just with the war on drugs, which you quite right has failed completely, and the war on terror, but with the Black Lives Matter protest, we're seeing people saying effectively that American policing has been over-militarized. In fact, a lot of these serving police officers now are veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. So these things are interconnected. But the lesson for us to learn is we can't just shoot our way out of every problem and think that being tough is going to make it go away. I mean, the drugs problem, when you look at the metrics, is just horrible. Despite lots of hard work, the profit motive drives the volumes up, and the problem hasn't gone away. Policing by itself can't do that, and military interventions by themselves can't do this. And with the drugs war, of course, there's a problem in Afghanistan itself. It's the number one supplier of opiates, and that's a lot of what gives financial energy to the Taliban and al-Qaeda. And we've always put that problem in Afghanistan in the too hard basket, not wanted to deal with it.
Well, Greg, look, one we could talk about for quite a while yet, but do appreciate you joining us on this morning.
Oh, great to be back, Todd. I wish we could be focusing on more positive topics. The reality is the good news in this area with these topics will come by helping people and societies build strong communities and strong nations, not by the approaches we have sadly failed in taking.
Yeah, you would love to see it. Thanks very much, Greg.
Thanks, Sean.